I am succeeding in a role that is not aligned with my heart and my gut. Bit of a golden handcuff situation, and I'm not culturally aligned with the organization. I'm building a business on the side that has great potential. When do I make the jump?
Yeah. So from my perspective, and you probably know what I'm going to say here, if you've read the book Leadership Strategy and Tactics Field Manual, and that is iterative steps. You know, I always utilize the iterative decision-making process. What that means is if I'm out on an operation with Chris and we've got our platoon in a building and we start taking fire from the north, I don't say, hey, everyone, get online. We're going to attack to the north. I don't say that. Even though I was known for being a very decisive leader, what I would say in an instant, I would make a very quick, rapid decision. I'd say, Chris, go to the roof and tell me what you see. I would make that decision very quickly. Chris would go up to the roof and say, hey, Jocko, there's one guy over there up to the north with a one AK-47. I'd say, okay, that's good to know. Let's move one building to the north. So we'd want move one building to the north. Are we still taking fire? Yeah, we're still taking fire. Chris, go up there and tell me what you see again. Oh, yeah, it's still one guy with an AK-47. We got 30 guys in our platoon, so let's go a little further north. So we move another building to the north. Now I say, Chris, go up there and tell me what you see. And he said, oh, 30 enemy just showed up. They've got a technical vehicle. They've got heavy weapons, and they're starting to move in our direction. Now what do I say? Do I say everyone run away? No, I say, okay, maybe we start moving south. Maybe we get some fire support overhead. So I'm going to make iterative steps, and I'm going to pay attention to the feedback. So in your case, I think, Scott, it's a real obvious answer. We want to mitigate risk as much as possible, right? You have a family. You want to be able to, you're sitting in your house. You want to be able to pay your bills. So we don't want to take risk with our family's financial security by jumping off into this unknown, which is what the new endeavor is, an unknown, right? We don't know what's going to come from that. So what I would do is I would continue to look. We're going to work really hard. We're going to be working two jobs until we get this side hustle endeavor up to a point where you go, okay, yep, I can see it. And then you can kind of eventually walk away from the current gig that has the financial stability. I would definitely be putting savings away. And you don't have to wait until you're equal, but you've got to at least see the trajectory that, yeah, we're going to get there. And you can tell the family, the wife and kids, hey, we're going to take a little risk. You know, it's as my parents famously used to tell me, it's going to be a lean Christmas. And like, as long as the family understands it's going to be a lean Christmas, at some point you can make that transition. But I would do it with iterative steps. I would feel very comfortable about my new endeavor, make sure that it has the traction that I think it has. I don't make moves. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. I'm not making a move based on hope. I'm not making a move based on, I really love this other endeavor that I'm in. And that's where I'm going to jump into. Because you know what I love doing, Scott? I love surfing and I love doing jiu-jitsu. I don't get paid to surf. You know what I mean? And I can't do that. So even though it's a passion, even though I love it, I know I can't walk away from the rest of my life and go surfing all the time. But I think that's what you do in this scenario. You continue to build out the side project. You're going to be hustling for the next, call it 18 to 24 months. And you should probably be able to judge in the next 6 to 9 months whether this side hustle endeavor has the capability and the opportunity to truly build you a financial life that you want and you're able to provide for your family. And then, you know, don't lie to yourself. That's where we make the mistake, right? I invented some widget. I can't believe everyone's going to want this widget that I invented. And the market's going to give you the feedback. The widget is not, people either want the widget or they don't. And sometimes we're wrong. So I would take iterative steps. I would be honest with myself about the reality of the side hustle endeavor. And I would be careful about walking away from a secure situation, which is how I provide for my wife and kids, which is ultimately more important than our happiness. You know, our happiness compared to taking care of our wife or kids, like we don't care about that. You know, okay. Now we don't want to stay in a crap job forever. And you absolutely, that was the last point that I'd written down is you got to have some kind of an exit strategy. Like regardless, you got to start figuring out an exit strategy where you can move away from this thing that you don't want because you don't want to be miserable. Make sense, Scott?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Jack.
What'd I miss? What'd I miss, Chris?
Nah, it's a good game plan. I mean, I love the way that you laid it out. I love the concept of, you know, there's a certain amount of selfishness that everybody has to be careful of. Am I unhappy? Is that put my family in a bad position? And then if he makes a bad decision based on, you know, the personal happiness at the moment, then, you know, a couple of weeks out, he's in a really tough spot because now he's sort of trapped himself by not being able to take care of his family. And team first, and your family's your first team, right?
Yeah. And by the way, having a stable income while you're trying to do something else is actually a huge blessing. And, you know, you're probably pulling some money from your stable income to put into your new endeavor. So I think it's a win across the board. Make that slow transition and listen to the feedback that the world is giving you.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, data improves design. Execute a little bit, see what kind of data you get back and what it tells you.
So if you know, you're trying to extract advice from them on how to advance your career, but what would you be asking them? What would you be trying to delve in to extract some pearls of wisdom from them?
Well, if my common advice that I give to people if they are looking to get promoted is to not think about getting promoted. And if someone is focused on getting promoted, then just, you know, intent has a smell. And the whole team's looking at them and thinking, oh, Chris is just doing this because he's trying to kiss up to Jocko because he wants that promotion. That's why he's showing up early. Oh, Chris is just trying to turn this information in and do his project, get it done on time so that he looks good and he gets the credit. And everybody smells that. And it ends up creating bad relationships and antagonistic relationships. So when I'm asking one of my leaders, you know, what can you do or what can we do in order to move forward? It's the first law of combat leadership for me, which is cover and move, which is how can I best support the team? So when I'm talking to any of my subordinates or my superiors, what I say to them is, hey, how can I help you win? How can I support you? What do you need from me? That's my main concern. Whether someone's up, down, or across the chain of command from me, what can I do to help? How can I support you?
Okay. And to be able to develop that type of relationship, are you a naturally empathetic person to be able to develop those relationships where you can just, you know, whether it's talking up or working across or working down? You find you're just naturally empathetic to those situations?
That's something we'd have to ask a psychologist, but this much I can tell you. If you get inside of an organization, whether it's a SEAL platoon or a consulting business or any type of business or any type of team or any type of organization, the best way for that team to move forward is when they're working together to support each other. And just like I started off talking to Chris and saying that the best quality of a SEAL is the individual that helps other people out and supports the rest of the team and looks out for their friends. That's what makes a SEAL platoon strong. What makes a SEAL platoon strong isn't the number of pull-ups the people can do. It isn't the amount of rounds they can put on target. What makes a SEAL platoon strong is the relationships that they have and the support they give to each other. And so it's the same thing in any team, in any organization. The better relationships you have, the more you support each other, the better the team's going to be. And I learned that very early in the SEAL teams. And that's why it's always been a focus of mine. Whether I'm a psychologically empathetic person, I'm not 100% sure, but I do know that if you want to have a strong team that achieves victory, you have to have a team that looks out for each other. And that's why my number one concern is, how can I help you?
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining today's video. If you're interested in more like it, go ahead and click the bottom right of your screen. Today, I would also like to introduce you to a live learning platform called Fireside. Fireside allows you to tune in with one of our expert negotiation coaches every single week. They will teach you the ins and outs of our effective negotiation techniques. And the best part of it all, you can ask your questions live, just like in this video here. So the real question is, what's holding you back? The link is in the description below, and I hope you have a great day.